Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, everybody, and welcome along to All Net, the Irish Examiner basketball podcast. I'm Conor Meaney, as always, and I'm joined by Kieran Shannon. Kieran, you're very welcome. It's Cup Finals week, with the biggest week in the Irish basketball calendar.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like, whatever about the league, where it is relative to the Cup as a weekend in itself, with all the finals being played on the same weekend, it is the date, it is the... and. We have, I think we've touched on it before. I think they've got a great balance now. Having the semi-final is a great weekend, 2 weeks ago in Cork, and now we're up in Dublin. 30 years of us in the arena, tasty finals in both. We'll obviously be zoning in on the two Super League finals, but there's loads of basketball. Yay, even going, you're probably at the bottom level of the... of the schedule there on the bill, Conor, but you're part of the weekend again. How have preps been?
Yeah, it's nice to be involved. Our Division 1 team actually won the NICC the last time it was held in 2020, I think it was. Yeah, 20. I was playing that year as well, and they had it separate to the rest of the National Cup. It was held on a weekend by itself, and just deflated the whole thing. Wasn't that exciting or anything else, and now suddenly you're back in the full weekend, and it adds a bit of fun to the whole thing. People are excited about it. Playing in the arena as it's set up properly for the finals and everything else is exactly what you want to do. It's very different than probably a lot of my other cup final experiences, but it's nice to still be able to be involved in that weekend, and I'll have the boys up to watch me and stuff, which they haven't really been able to do. Like, a lot of times when you're playing Dublin League, you play, like we played last night at 8:45 last night. And so it's very different. So, but it's exciting. It's fun to be part of it.
Well, we're joined today by two men who know all about the Cup weekend, know how to, they've been in loads of finals, and they've won more than their share of them. We'll be joined later by Mark Scannell, well known obviously for Glanmire, but 25 years ago was involved with Neptune in a cup final, and 10 years ago got them their last cup win. And we're joined by another veteran and thankfully still active on the scene, Pat Price. Pat, you're very welcome to the Examiner Pod, All Net Pod.
Hi, lads. Thanks for having me. Great podcast.
That's good to hear, Pat, as you've some experience in it and yourself. And look, you've loads of experience in the cup. And I was just going through it, Pat. You have been involved in, from what I can see, 5 Super League finals, winning 3 of them. And the first 4 were all one basket games. Several of them went to overtime, the same as your semi-finals. So you, what does the cup, when you contextualize it, and the first of those was 24 years ago.
Well, I think a lot of it, If you're looking at it from a traditional club point of view, it's obviously always been a highlight on the calendar. I came in as an import, you know, similar to a player, so there was a mindset adjustment that I had to make, or say the other imports had to make, in terms of how do you get your head around the fact that this game, which is in October, might be more important than that following game in November. And then you got to pick it back up again, because that might be a cup quarterfinal. And then, you know, you get to a cup final. I think, you know, the X factor and all that is the fact that you're getting to the nationally televised stages. And then you start to get a better appreciation for what does that mean for your club in terms of exposure, or generating as much exposure for your sponsors, And you know, the more you appreciate what it means to the club and the history of the club to get to the televised stages or to get to the point where you can either generate additional sponsorship, top up on your sponsorship, or get the proper branding and exposure for your existing sponsor. When you have an appreciation for that, that's great. And then you got to park and focus on the moment or the game. And I learned an awful lot of lessons over the last 25 years about the cup and how to manage that. And some of those lessons you learn the hard way.
Well, what were some of the hard lessons learned?
Well, I think, again, if I had takeaways, you know, there's the cup final, but because the cup is a knockout stage, you treat every game like a final, you know? And so I think probably you mentioned five senior finals, but there's probably well over 30 cup games I've been involved with. And I think my takeaways and any advice I'd give to younger coaches going through the process, and some of these guys are first time in the cup finals, is, you know, you have to make adjustments, and you have to be willing to make adjustments, and the adjustments within a game, you know, they have to be non-emotive, and sometimes in a cup final you can get caught in the emotion of the game and not be as properly analytical as you should be. You know, you need to really park your ego and you need to be able to watch with a critical eye while everything else around you seems chaotic because of the noise and the experience in the moment. But you have to be able to make your in-game adjustments. And that includes, you know, when I say park your ego, I mean, it's tied to also you've put a lot of time into your game plan and everybody's doing their scouting reports. Well, what do you do when your game plan gets turned on its head, either because of foul trouble or an injury, or you say, hey, look, at something simply not working here. You know, what are your contingencies? Do you have those ready? And can you address that with a level head? And then within that, you know, is there the strong internal leadership within the team? And I think I would have been, you know, probably better dealing with that in my later years than I was in my first couple of years, where, you know, you think it's a one-man show and you realize, you know, you really got to lean on the players and their experience and their leadership. And, you know, and I think the experience of going through cup finals and I don't know, I heard years ago, somebody say, oh, well, you know, you have to lose a cup in order to win a cup. You know, there's still a basketball game to be played.
Go back to ego, because certainly from a player's perspective, for Irish players in particular, when you're in the cup final for the first time, you're in this whole mode of, people are going to see me play at the top level that don't always see me play. And I remember when I was younger that you're like, oh, the guy in work might think that I'm good if I play well or whatever else. And then you're kind of like, actually, they have no idea what is even going on, and they have no concept of it. When you're game planning, so like for someone like Charlie Crowley, he's obviously a young coach going into his first cup final. Is there a danger of trying to overcomplicate things to show that you're a good coach when you're like, get away from what has gotten you to that point and just kind of like, well, maybe if I try something out a little different than we usually do, people will be like, oh, that was really smart by him. And not just Charlie, but for any of the coaches over the weekend.
Sure. That's a great point. You know, it's a little bit like the guy who tries to get a new haircut the week before he gets married. Do you know what I mean? You never want to do anything big, you know, anything different before you do anything big, and just in case you might get it wrong. I think within your own game plan, I'm sure that both Darren McGovern and Charlie Crowley have their own, scouting, and that they've been working on the scout throughout the past week or two to just to prepare. And you know, there might be tweaks or adjustments. And again, the teams have faced each other, you know, as well as what would you do differently? I remember, you know, talking to guys, even like when Jay Larinaga used to talk about in the playoffs, when you play a series, you know, when you're playing these teams multiple times, you know, your adjustments are game to game. Your scouting report in game two might look very different than it did in game one. And your scouting report in game five might look different than game two, because it's all about adjustments. It is like, what are the players doing? Are you learning on the fly? Or are you caught in the moment, right? Are you learning on the fly? Hey, look at, they're really, this is a point of emphasis for them. And it's working. So we've got to try to make our adjustment. You know, what's our counter move? It is a bit of a chess match. Finals aren't always pretty, you know, people talk about cup classics, but there's been plenty of them that you go, well, you know what? this is really just about the result, and let's see if we can grind it out. So I think the number one takeaway is those kind of in-game adjustments. And also, you know, really, so many cup finals have been close down the stretch. And Kieran, you mentioned, you know, the overtime games or the buzzer beaters and, you know, and things like that. But, you know, and the guy in the seventh row, did they realize, you know, that we missed some layups there, or we missed free throws in the first quarter as well, you know, point blank shots. So I just think that I call it red zone. And those last couple of minutes of each quarter, are you aware of the time, the score, the foul count? You know, are we in the bonus? Is somebody in foul trouble? Red zone execution really, really matters. And mastering those special situations, even little things like your out unders, you know, from under the basket, your side outs. Are you happy just to get the ball out, or do you see something where you might be able to get a score or put a team under pressure? Oftentimes too, and I thought that in the semifinal, Aina really dodged a bullet when Mark Reynolds picked up his second foul. You know, that there was, you know, I didn't see any concerted effort to really take him on and put him into continued pressure, you know. So I just like to look for, now that I'm observing more than participating, I like to look and see the chess match between the coaches, and then what are the players doing to adjust to the situation at hand.
Yeah, it's interesting. Over the course of those finals, did you pick up on Irish players in particular of how they reacted? Like, obviously there's different people are going to react to the moment in different ways and everything else, but was there any kind of consistency over how you saw not only your own players, but opposition? It's kind of, it's even from a coaching point of view at the start of the game, of points of emphasis, if you're trying to get guys to settle into the game and not go outside of what they're kind of doing, is there anything that you picked up over the years that you'd see in these kind of moments? Are you be trying to emphasize to guys what, like, I guess where I'm getting at is, what are the controllable factors that you really know that this kind of TV environment and everything else is going to bring out, that you know it's coming, but it's just, how do you control it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I would always keep an eye and an ear out for the communication levels amongst the players. You know, as much as the coaches think that they're in control, they're really not. You know, they're in control, thankfully, because it's a stop clock situation, and you know, you can control situations from there, when to time out and things like that. But I would always look for, in terms of the leveling, I would always look for the level of engagement of the players, whether they be, you know, your domestic players or your imports, because you know, the situation presents itself in different ways. You have the razzmatazz, you have the TV, but the pressure, you know, I would suggest to the players, the pressure is a privilege. You know, that this is a privileged opportunity you have. Every other team in the country wants to be on that bench with you. To your question, I used to love to see the level of talk, especially during dead ball situations. I'm thinking now of guys like Tim O'Halloran. You know, Tim wouldn't have been regarded, say, as a big name superstar with, you know, necessarily, but I would stand over, and I've said this previously, I don't know how many championships or trophies we would have been able to pull off without a guy like Tim O'Halloran. Do you know what I mean? Who loved those moments, who loved making the big stops, who love doing, making the little plays that don't necessarily show up on the score sheet. I'm thinking of him during cup games and his level of eye contact and his communication with his teammates during dead balls. You know, it was very admirable.
You mentioned those games, and you mentioned the legs of Tim. And again, when is the time that you yourself got on? You mentioned red zone execution, like, because they were tight games, all those finals. What's one that you go, God, I got that one wrong? And what's one where, yeah, we got that one right, and I'm proud of that one? Because, you know, there was all those overtime games. You're like, DeShane Collin won two finals on the free throw line on the buzzer, Limerick as well. And then you lost one to Notre Dame, who obviously have links with Aina, who are there now. Where are ones that you maybe got slightly right and you got maybe wrong?
Well, if you want to talk about the ones I got wrong, I'm assuming this is an extended podcast, you know, extended version or bonus time we have here. But no, I again, you know, I started off saying about mastering those red zone situations and the adjustments you make and what lessons do you learn over the years. But a hard, hard lesson I learned, I thought I was doing the right thing at the time, which is we in the 99 Cup final, I'm dating myself, I know, but in the 99 Cup final, we made a terrific rally in the final against Denny Notre Dame, the Anthony Jenkins and all those fellas. We made a terrific, terrific comeback. And I think we were down by one possession with there was maybe up around 30 seconds left. Kieran, knowing you, you'll probably tell me exactly how much time was on the clock. But we had an incredible, I told the lads in the timeout, I said, you know, we're going to make the stop. I was convinced we were going to make the stop. The guys were so tuned in and so focused, and we had all the momentum, and, you know, the crowd was roaring. The place was, it was a great moment, really. And there was no one in the building that was going to convince me with 30 some seconds left on the clock that we weren't going to get the ball back. And we were down by one basket. Nobody could have told me that, hey, you're not actually going to get the ball back. And our defense was outstanding. The ball gets swung around. Lenny McMillan is literally, and I'm not, this is not a joke, he's literally falling out of bounds from the right corner in the National Arena. And for like this shot at the shot clock buzzer, not the game buzzer, the shot clock buzzer. And he falls out of bounds, but the ball like bounces hard off the side of the rim and long rebounds back out. And he steps back in bounds, and all of a sudden they recovered the ball. And then it was one of those things, guys, almost like in slow motion. As soon as they got the offensive rebound, I was like, no, because it dawned on me that we had four fouls to give. And basically, long story short, was over the last like 9 or 10 seconds of the game, they ran out the clock because we would foul. They would inbound from the side. So that is a lifetime of regret that I remember with detail 20 some years later.
you recovered, and then you got on the right side of some of them, Pat. And look, you mentioned that you go back, but look, you have a recent involvement in the Cup. We've been talking a lot about your involvement with UCC Blue Demons in Cork, but you also obviously did. You were involved with Neptune, who got to league finals and cup semi-finals, and then look, Tralee, who you won a Super League with, got to a Super League Cup semi-final 2020, played Aina, so they're a team you know well because they beat you on that occasion. And look, I know that you have been watching them. They played down in Cork twice to get to the final. What's striking you about Aina?
Aina to me is I'm seeing, you know, a couple of years ago when we were going through those games with them, they seemed almost like the new kids on the block. You know, there was a bit of an edge to them. They were a different side than they are now. There's a lot of same faces, but I see a maturity in them now that maybe I didn't see a couple of years ago, and that they're fairly level headed. You know, they could have gone down. I was at the Neptune game where they beat Neptune, and I was at the Ballincollig, the Emporium Cork game. And I just like the maturity within the squad, and there's a level-headedness, whether that comes from Darren or whether that comes from the backcourt and Josh Wilson, and or whether that comes from the maturity of guys like Mark Reynolds. I just like there was a level-headedness there that really suits them well for a final, by the way. There's a level-headedness there that they're able to weather the storm. And in both of those games, they didn't lose their way. And more importantly, they kept an emotional pace, if you will, that served them well in both the quarterfinal and the semifinal. So that's the thing that impresses me about them, is that they don't really seem to get rattled.
No, we've seen that, they've won all sorts of games this year and a variety of different situations. And I think one of the things for me with them is that things can be going, they can look like the worst offensive team for 12 minutes straight. And then suddenly in 3 minutes, they kind of just get an incredible momentum. And when they ride that momentum, it's really powerful. And we saw the last time they were in the Cup final, they just had incredible support in the arena. And I think they feed off that sort of, like, you see them, they flex more than any team you're going to see running down the court. Josh does it. Everyone does it. And it's very hard to to contain that when a team is coming back at you. You mentioned Mark Reynolds in that semi-final that he kind of got in foul trouble, and I think Emporium Cork basketball don't really play interior basketball in the same way that University of Galway do. So University of Galway have two big bodies there that it's probably the biggest worry on Darren McGovern's kind of plate this week is just how they deal with the size internally. Is that what you would look at, or what are you looking at as the big worry?
I would. I mean, again, they have a very strong, and there's depth in post there too. A couple of those guys, are pretty interchangeable, and there's plenty of fouls to use up there. And they're a big, strong body. I saw Mary in the semifinals, and they're as strong a side as you're going to find, obviously, and their record in the league speaks to that as well. I was particularly very, very impressed with Jarrett Haynes, and he could score in a variety of ways, and he's one of these guys you could just see him going off in a cup final. You could just see him going off. He's built for production. He's a prolific scorer. He really is. And I think the only thing that would stop him from being prolific would be the way he involves his teammates. You know, he's really good. I was very impressed with him.
Yeah, he struggled last weekend against Colesa, but I think Murray kind of struggled in general as a dogfight. It looked like a trap game, really, where their minds weren't fully there, but also Colesa are very good defensively. It's one of the questions that's kind of gone around on people's minds is like two of the games that Murray have lost this year, they've played against zone, a lot of zone. Adrian Fulton would say that he had a lot of success in the second game against Murray with zone. Danny O'Mahony played zone with Demons against them.
Yeah,
it's not in Aina's nature really to play a lot of zone. They did last weekend against Tralee, and it didn't look great. When you know there's a weapon there, but you don't use it very often, how tempting is it to kind of again dip into that bag of tricks to look at something that maybe you're not always doing, but you know is a weakness of your opponent?
Sure. I think, obviously from a coaching point of view, you need to be able to say, hey, look at I believe that this can make a difference. I mean, I'm going to really age myself. I learned about the adjustment stuff. I was an assistant on a high school team in 1993. We played 29 straight games, a man-to-man in the state Pennsylvania State Championship. The head coach said, "Nah, we're going to go with a zone today," and we won the game. And so it was also a lesson to me. It's saying, "Hey, look at if you believe it, and you believe that players are capable of doing it." You mentioned Aina showing the zone in against Tralee last week, and I mean, where they get in a dry run. Where they get a dry run for what's to come. And look at, I think that you have to be able to believe into it. There's no magic offense and there's no magic defense. Everything comes down to the execution of it. Some of that execution is tied to, do the players understand their roles within that particular defense? Do they believe in it? That's a big part of it too. I always notice too when guys go from man to zone, if a guy hit back-to-back threes against a man-to-man, nobody screams, "You got to go zone," but if a guy hits back-to-back threes against his own, nobody, everybody says, "You got to get back to man-to-man." So yeah. Everything really does come down to execution. I think we're set for a terrific match though for the final. I think it's, I like the energy that Mary bring. A lot of it would be how do they handle the occasion too. But I think it's really it's set up for a really nice match here though.
Who do you think will win it?
Well, you're really doing that, huh?
Yeah, that's
what
I say.
For
I don't know.
We won't get to it ourselves.
I don't want to get heckled on Twitter here, fellas. All right. Well, look. If we're doing that, I'm gonna go with Aina on the back of again. I've an appreciation for the maturity that they've shown in some tough situations so far this year, and I like their experience at this level as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've been struck by just how measured you hit upon that, Pat, and I interviewed Darren for tomorrow's paper, and I was talking to him about that, and like their whole game plan is based around just getting you to the fourth quarter. You talked about how, let's say, Neptune had that run at the start of the quarterfinal, 19-6, but you know, there's every game, even in Tralee. I was down in Tralee last Saturday night, and let's say Tralee were about 8 or 10 up at going into halftime. Within a minute and a half, they had to call a timeout. Donaghy had to really rollick his boys because they got it back to 1 or 2. So they believe at any moment they feel they can go on a 7-0 run, and they feel then they have the depth. Now there's been times where, like against Stair, they feel if boys are rolling, they might stick with the same five, but they have so many guys to come in. There is the issue of injuries. Now they have a next man up mentality. Like, I mean, in the Neptune game, Tomic wasn't available. They've won games. Sean Jenkins is 50-50. You know, I see he was put forward for the media. I get the impression he'll be up for this. He's a gamer. But, you know, so that I do think just that experience. But then again, Mary, I know they were in a semi-final last year. I think that experience will have helped them playing against Neptune. And look, just the league they're having, they're legit too. Like, it wouldn't be a surprise. It just would be, we're going on just the depth and experience of Aina just having maybe a little bit of a competitive advantage there.
Yeah, well, look, cup finals could throw up a lot of things. You know, I remember, you know, nothing's really won on paper, but we've had teams that were on paper less talented than the teams we beat in finals, and that was flipped on us in other years as well.
So yeah, Connor has a medal, like, you know.
Like, he does.
He knows all about it. So
if it's about who's supposed to win, we could all stay at home, right? You know, yeah, they could just post out the trophy. Meant to be played.
Just, Pat, one other thing, and I think we certainly fell victim of this, is stylistically you have Murray play really nice, controlled offense. Jarrod Haynes, like, it's a lot more methodical. You know what they're doing. They're running sets, everything else. Aina are pretty different from that. It's like, at times, it's like a little bit haphazard, but they want to find a matchup that they want to take advantage of. In the arena and in that environment, it's like hot, heavy. Sometimes running nice offense isn't the easiest thing to do when it's loud. We certainly struggle with that. Like, the year we lost to Temple Oak, everyone would talk about the Giannis thing, which we would actually never speak of it. It's not a thing for us. The thing about that, looking back at that final, was how disappointing we were in our own performance offensively all game long. We were terrible. And we couldn't get into a rhythm of our normal nice offense. You commentated on our semifinal that year. And when we were good that year, we were free flowing. We moved the ball really well, and we just couldn't get into it. And I'm just wondering, is that another advantage for Aina, is that they don't have to get into that sort of stuff to be able to execute, that they're able to find stuff in that, they already operate in that kind of dirty chaos. And is that a big factor for them?
That's a great line. Dirty chaos. I think that one of my big takeaways, say from the Neptune game, that was the quarterfinal, right? With Aina, was really the simplicity at which they played. I mean, they probably scored 10 points off give and goes, you know, like, yeah, like old school basketball. I'm going to pass it to you. I'm going to cut, and you're going to give it back, and I'm going to get a layup. And like, there's a beauty to that game, you know, that's not reliant, and it has nothing to do with heavy tactics, or it's not necessarily something, unless you state as a point of emphasis defensively, hey, you know, you got to really jump to the ball hard here, and we have to flood that because they're passing it back to the cutters. Like, again, the simplicity. So you had talked about systems. You know, if the system is rigid, you know, that could be something you say, we're going to take away X and Y here, you know, give them Z, but, you know, cause you're always giving up something, but we're going to take if they're running a set play repeatedly, well, there's certain, whether you're trying to blow up how they initiate an offense, or look at this is what they're trying to get to. There's going to be a point of emphasis within every defense that they do, but can you operate outside of that? You know, that's going to be a big deal come the weekend. Can you operate outside of it when somebody takes away option one and option two?
So listen, Pat, thanks very much for joining us on the On Net Pod. We'll have you back on when we're next back on again. Thanks very much for joining us and, you know, for giving us such insight. As I said, you're a veteran of cup finals, so many experience. And we're actually going to be joined here by, you know, someone who knows, who's been in even more finals. Mark Scannell, we're delighted to say is joining us. Mark has unique perspective because, Mark, I bumped into you in Cork in the hall the weekend of the quarterfinals, and you had lost, Glenmire had lost the Trinity Meteors, and you were saying it was going to be the first cup semi-final weekend you hadn't been involved with. You know, that's how many semi-finals you've been involved with. And look, no one's been involved with more finals, both, you know, particularly on the women's end. You've won 7 of them as far as I know, and you've been in 10 years ago this weekend, you won with Neptune. So, Mark, thanks very much for joining us. Mark, what talk to us there. We were just talking about to Pat there at the start. How do you find, what does a cup finals weekend represent to you? How is it different to any other occasion within this club?
How are you, lads? Delighted to be here. Listen, it's, look, for me, it's very unusual this weekend not being involved, obviously, but in general, I mean, it's the pinnacle of our season. No matter what way you dress it up, it becomes almost part of how you set out at the start of the year to where you're going to be in January. So whether anyone says so or not, how you approach January is almost entirely different to how you, well, this is how we've done it down through the years. It's almost entirely different to how you approach the rest of the season. Week in, week out, there's so many other factors that come into play on a week like this. And really, I suppose, it's keeping all that noise out and trying to concentrate just on the actual basketball and on your opponent and on performing on the day is the really difficult part. As you know, we all have sponsors. We have, you know, people in the club that do loads of work. They get a kind of little bit of limelight this time of year. You're trying to, you know, keep the press and the media and everybody involved. You're trying to do all those different things. So that's really the challenge, I think, for especially now, for teams that are in it for probably the first time in a long time. And I heard Pat talking earlier on there about Marie and Aina and their situation. And I suppose it's going to be similar for the likes of Trinity Meteors and Killester have a little bit more experience, but it's a totally different, I suppose the short answer is it's different. It's a one-off game and there's huge media presence around it. So we obviously treat it a lot differently.
Like Mark, you would have had played in a few of them as a player yourself, you know, and then you were coaching. It's 25 years ago you coached Neptune. It was your first year in the Super League. And as I said, you've been back to that stage many a time since. Like Charlie Crowley is in his first cup final. Darren still a coach at 38, albeit at second Super League final. But from that experience, what hit you? Like even what triggered there, you were talking about sponsors. I remember actually the Evening Echo and Cork sponsoring Neptune for that 98 cup final. And just what did you learn early from that? What can hit a first-time coach, even though you had been coaching for years before then?
I think the outside factors, excuse me, are the big problem. I think what I've learned down through the years more than anything else is that you have to allow the people around you to look after a lot of the stuff that you can't control. I think that's really important because I remember my first year with Neptune. I was a very young coach at the time. A lot of the players I was playing with were my peers. And I suppose I was trying to control a situation that I had absolutely no understanding of. Whereas people like Mick Noonan at the time and Dave Cody and people like this and Neptune, Tony O'Connell, these people, they had loads of experience of that. And I probably should have allowed them to do more back then. And that was a very valuable lesson learned from day one, to like, allow the people in the club do their jobs. And you do your job, and your job is to coach the team and prepare the team and keep it ready. I know now when I'm in cup finals with Glenmire, we try to do all the media stuff 2 weeks beforehand. I suppose that was a little thing we learned from the GA, is like try to get as much done as you can 2 or 3 weeks before the final, so that the week or two leading up to the final, you can concentrate completely on your basketball. I think the other thing is not to worry about the outcomes. You know, like you're in a big game and we all worry about if we win, we have to do this. And if we lose, it'll be a big disappointment and so on. I think you really have to control the controllables in those situations. And you have to make sure that your assistant coaches and your staff have scouted the opposition and that we're bang on with what we want to do as a group. You have to make sure, obviously, that your preparation and your training schedule is bang on. You have to try and simulate some of the stuff. I think, like, the time of your game is usually different in a cup final. You know, usually if you play on 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you could be playing at 8 o'clock at night or 5 o'clock at night with the girls, you know. So I think all of these things we overlook. But as you get more experience, these things become very important, even down to, you know, sometimes we get new gear for the cup final and I try to stop all of that, not, you know, just try and do what you're doing. You get your new gear at the start of the season, you set out your goals, and one of your goals is to be in the cup final. And I hate, like, when we change that, when we change, like, the uniforms we're wearing, how we approach, what time we go to the game, what time we go to the gym. So I think the big challenge for teams that are in it for the first time is to try and keep as much normality around.
We have two Dublin teams in the final, so look, they're going to just rock up. But let's say for a Cork team playing at 5:30, that would have been the case for you last year against MCU. Yeah. And as you said, it's now, would you go up on the day or would you go up the night before, or what way?
Yeah, normally, you know, for a 5:30 game, we'd go up on the day more than likely. But then you see, the basketball community is so small that you'd have players on our team whose husbands and boyfriends might have been playing the night before in the arena and so on, and they'd want to be at that game. And there's lots of different stuff like that. So normally what I tell the girls, or what I used to do, is that if we're going up the night before, you're going up as a kind of an individual almost. And we would have a time in the afternoon that we would have to be in the hotel. So whether that's for breakfast in the morning or whether it's, you know, you go up the night before. Now, to be fair, over the last number of years, we've generally gone up the night before because we would have maybe another team in a final or something down through the years. We might have had an 18s team and a 20s team, and obviously you want to support them. But where possible, we would try to keep it on the day, but it's not always that possible around the cup. But the bottom line is we'd usually practice it. If we did go up the night before, we'd usually practice, we'd usually shoot maybe the afternoon we get there, and make the nighttime kind of give them their own space, let them do what they want to do, like go to a game in the arena, maybe stay in the hotel, watch it on the TV, whatever. And then we'd have a team meeting normally, you know, at 10 o'clock-ish, and they'd set out the plan for breakfast the next morning. We would always shoot after breakfast. We would always go to usually King's Hospital or wherever. That was kind of our tradition. And then pretty much go back, have a team lunch, give them a bit of rest, and then head over to the stadium, whatever time, maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock. And then have your warm-ups maybe as you know, normal as possible. But again, like TG Cahir and other people would have you, there's certain times where they'd want team photographs or interviews and so on. So you kind of have to work with all of that. But in general, you know, I suppose over the last number of years, because of the final being at 5:30, we had no choice really but to go up the night before. Whereas sometimes I would have preferred to go up on the day, you know, like it's a normal National League game away, you know.
Yes. Do you like the women's final being a standalone as opposed to the men's final coming on after? Is it better as a standalone, the way they have it right now?
I mean, it has its for and against. I think to develop the women's game, it's been really good the last few years, really, in that, like, we've had sellout crowds. We've had fantastic matches, and it's worked really well over the last number of years. And I think the Women's Super League Committee and Basketball Ireland people in general have done a really good job in setting the final in that situation. Obviously, I'm very traditionalist as well. I used to love the weekends where the semi-final was on the Friday night and Saturday night, and you played on the Sunday. As a player, I loved that. As a spectator, I loved that. It was a real cup weekend. But now with the Cork weekend sort of and the cup final weekend, they've kind of done a decent job on still having that and the cup final as a. And I think right now you couldn't fit people in, to be honest. If you had a women's final at 5 o'clock and a men's final at 8 o'clock, it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't work because, in fairness, the place is sold out again. I was only speaking to Karen Sullivan the other day, actually, about, I was at the Ballincollig game last Saturday, and the number of people going to basketball now that I would say are not basketball people is frightening. And it's not frightening in a bad way. It's frightening in a good way. It's just incredible the interest. And like when you go to a Neptunes or Demons game, at times you know everybody in the arena. But like I found when you go to some of the other places now, there's loads of GA people there. There's loads of other sport people there, and it's great for the game, you know.
Well, Mark, as someone who has looked, you were there at the boom of the '80s, you know, playing with Successful Man and Demons teams, and you've consistently been involved in the Super League. As you said, you went from winning a Super League with Neptune in 97 to coaching in a cup final in 98. You've seen the league ebb and flow. Just on that, you do think now this is as high as it's been post the '80s, is it? And why, what would you attribute it to?
I think basketball has grown hugely in the world, and it's like as in, I suppose, the amount of YouTube stuff, the amount of NBA stuff on Sky and the amount of stuff like that TG Carr carries now with the international games and everything. I just think the interest is at an all-time high. I think a lot of other sports are very interested in how basketball works. I think a lot of coaches are very interested. They watch games from a tactical point of view, just because it's on the telly. And I think people go to the games for the buzz of it. Again, it's back again. You know, there is a great buzz there. There is, like, when we played Galway earlier in the season in the girls, and I couldn't get over the crowd there for the girls game on a Saturday afternoon above in University of Galway. It was brilliant. Any of the games I've watched on basketball or on TV, like I watched the Marion Demons game actually, as it happened last Saturday night, and I couldn't get over the crowd. You know, it's just been, anytime you go to Ballincollig, you can't get in half the time.
It's funny, Mark. At the start of this season, when we've obviously, we're not the strongest Super League team this year in Marion, and a young team, and we were kind of like, will we struggle attendance wise to even like make enough money to be kind of getting by and everything else? Our attendance this year, despite the way the lack of success and everything else, is better than the year that we won the league, significantly better as well, consistently. And part of that is absolutely like, we have a lot of young guys who've grown up through the club, and the wider club wants to see them do well, and they're absolutely supporting it. But it's definitely this whole thing. It's basketball, certainly flavor of the month at the moment. That
it
is. You can pick it up, and it's part of the conversation. It's like, I'm not I'm only mid-30s, and when I was in school, you wouldn't really be kind of, if you play basketball, it's kind of like, oh, like, fine, why, like, you do that. But now if a kid says in school that they like basketball, the other kids would probably know a couple of the players or be able to say something about it, or they've seen stuff. And it's remarkable how it's changed so quickly in those years.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I mean, having a podcast like this every week, it has helped. You know, during the lockdown as well, there was a lot of Zoom stuff going on. People became more aware of what was going on. And I think people just love being at the games now. I mean, I love on a Saturday, like Cork is great at the moment because, you know, you can go to a Ballincollig game on a Saturday at 4 o'clock, and then you can go to the stadium on a Saturday night, and then you can go to the afternoon and watch Demons and maybe watch us before Demons. Then there's always a Brunel game on a Sunday. It's the same people going to the games, you know, and obviously there's the extra people then that the local clubs are doing themselves. It's just been great.
The exact situation you're talking about is a huge problem within Dublin, is that you can often have 6-7 games all tipping off 7 or 7:30 at the same time. And it's just, we don't have that same advantage. That it's brilliant, the idea that you can go to a couple of the games. And you even have the same, like even with Basketball Ireland TV, one of the things you see is, like, I obviously watch a good few of the games doing the column and different things, and they're all at the same time. A lot of them, of the games are very similar. And if we can, it's one of the big things, if we can stagger some of those or find ways to get the game spread over the weekend a little bit more, people will just take in even more of this than the other.
That's kind of my pet hate, actually. I think if we could do that, I think all the clubs should try to sit down in the different localities a little bit at the start of the season, look at their fixtures and figure it out a little bit better. I know it's hard for John Walsh to do that, and it's hard for the referees. But that's the one thing that, like, we should be giving ourselves every opportunity to get as many people to every game as possible. And that's probably the only downside at times when there's so many clubs in the same area. you know. But the other thing is the basketball on TV has helped, like, because we're there at times and we're watching, like, we're at the Neptune game and we're watching the Demons game, you know, or we're at a girls game and we're watching how our Trinity getting on or how our Liffey Celtic getting on. It's been great. Look, it's all good news, to be honest. It's definitely, you know, it's the thing, the place to be again. I watch my young fella there, Jack, when he's he meets all his buddies from Demons and Neptune or whatever, and they're all at the games again, you know, and that's brilliant. Like, it's a great thing.
And Mark, you've been coaching in the Women's Super League for 15 plus years. It's gone through different phases in that time. Look, Glanmire have been a constant throughout that time, you know. Where do you see the league now, both the quality and also its power dynamic? The way that Meteors now look like they could be on the cusp of something, you know, the way that, as I said, you've been constantly through, DCU have been always in the top three. Where do you see both the quality of the league and the dynamic power shift of the league at the moment?
The women's league in particular can change very quickly. One or two players can change the whole dynamic of a situation very quickly, as we all know. I mean, you have the Constance, you have the DCUs, you have the Glanmires, you have the Brunels, that and Kilester, you know. And but you see one or two players coming into Meteors have brought them from a mid-table team to like the team to beat right now. The Americans. Some of the Americans can change. Like, if you get a really good American, it can make a huge difference, you know. And I think we are getting better Americans. In the men's, they're getting unbelievable Americans at the moment. Some of the women's teams are getting really good Americans. And on the downside of that, if your Americans are not as good as they maybe you thought they were, that can create a major problem. There's a gap, I think, with the Irish players at the moment. In that we have a lot of really, really good young players coming through, like 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds coming through. And then you have the older players, like kind of from Grainne the Wire, we say, down to the likes of Aine McKenna, Claire Rock, all these kind of people. They're getting a bit older, you know, they're in there. And I think where there's a big gap at the moment in the women's basketball is the 25 to 30-year-olds. There's not as many. And I mean this with all due respect now, there's not as many dominant players in that age group.
What would you attribute that to, Mark? Is there anything to do with the discontinuation of the national team? You don't know that better than anyone.
I think there's two or three factors. I think that definitely didn't help. Because I think during that time, what people forget is we lost a lot of players to the GAA and to the rugby. Because if you couldn't play for your country at national level, the better athletes, and now for different reasons, the ladies Gaelic football did an unbelievable job in promoting the game there for 5 or 6 years there, and they got a lot of the better athletes that we would have had, maybe that would have played a lot of basketball. They went to football, and then that football became almost an all year round sport. And the girls that we used to get in the winter, we weren't getting as much, and they were committing to. They had no other choice. They couldn't miss practice, and they had to, you know, they had to kind of put in 100% effort, like the men in the GA teams. That helped. Rugby became, ladies rugby has gone, and I mean, some of our best players ended up playing rugby later on in their careers. And so we have competition. You know, we didn't, maybe when the Knee of the Wears and the Michelle Fies and the Michelle Askels and these people were coming through out of secondary school into college, basketball was the be all and end all for all of them. You know, I worried, I wonder if Gaelic football and rugby was as it is today, how many of those wonderful players that we had, top players, would have ended up playing other sports. And I think now the wheel is turning again and basketball is becoming really popular again. So the younger kids are playing basketball and they are playing Gaelic football as well. But I do think we've lost a generation, might be a bit much, but we've probably lost, you know.
That demographic is the key, Mark, isn't it?
Because it is.
Yeah, 25 to 30. And so that's overall. And then, look, the league itself, and you mentioned, look, Meteors rise, and you mentioned one or two players. Look, an obvious one. All right, they started with Actually, Sarah Kenny would have come through Glenmire, and then obviously you're well familiar with Edel from the national team and just being from Cork. And then it went with Dana, and nobody, you worked extensively with Claire Amelia. She's going for a personal three in a row, back-to-back Super League with different programs. Mark, what kind of, how, explain to someone who's maybe is only a passing interest, where you put her in the league, the pantheon even, as to what's happened before, and also the kind of personality and in coaching her.
Look, there, every few years, there's generational players, what I would call like, and I've been very lucky to coach a lot of them. Claire is there, thereabouts, but she's very young. And like she needs to enjoy her basketball. And we can't be putting those kind of comparisons on Claire yet. She had a wonderful year last year with Glenmire. She had a great team around her. She had some really good experienced players. And she was absolutely brilliant for us. And everything she got, she deserved, and she worked really hard for. This year, it's a little bit different in that she's probably the player on Meteors that they look to. She's been there, done that last year. So she's probably going in with a different dynamic in Meteors this year. There's a lot more expected of her, I think, at the start. She's done that. She's carried that team. But in the big picture, like, she's been a brilliant international all down from her under 16 days all the way up. But I think she needs to be, like, we need to kind of leave her alone a little bit as well and not be making too many comparisons. I mean, I can start naming names. Like, I mean, but like for me, players like Mary Breen, Michelle Fahey, you know, Niamh Dwyer, Grainne Dwyer, and then you go on to all the great players that I've been lucky to coach, like Claire Rockall, Claire O'Sullivan, she'll kill me. You know, Anya McKenna. And then you can go back as far as the Denise Walters and all these, and the Susan Morans and the Michelle Aspels. These were all fantastic players in their own right, and they all had their moment. And I think the big problem right now is that Claire is doing it so young. I mean, she's still only 22 years of age. And like as you said, she's going for back-to-back three in a row, which is unbelievable. But Gwen, sorry, Connor.
Yeah, just on that, I guess going back to the previous point of the gap between 25 and 30, like, what, and with Claire in mind and a group, the group of peers that she has around her that all had incredible success internationally underage and have come through and have had big moments in cups, the circuit tournaments, all those sort of ones, what needs to be done to keep this the right environment for them to keep kind of excelling and keep within the league so that they are there for the 25 to 30s. So that it's not just kind of, yes, the national team is back, which is absolutely a huge part of it. But is there other things that we need to be doing as a country to be really kind of fostering them to keep pushing on within Ireland and keep the environment right so that they want to be here and keep kind of doing this year in, year out?
I know this sounds very simple, but they need to be playing, you know? That's really important as well. And in the National League at times, we're lucky enough in the girls, and a lot of times there's two Americans. In the odd team, there's an odd European. But it's hard to keep. If you have a couple of 24 and 5-year-olds, maybe a couple of 30-year-olds, it's hard for the 18 and 19-year-olds. It's happening down in Waterford. It's not happening all around the country. Brunel, in fairness, are blooding a lot of young girls at the moment because they don't have Americans. But it's getting them the playing time can be difficult at times when they're coming from underage basketball into senior basketball. And, you know, that can be a deterrent because when kids get to college and they're like 19, 20, 21, and obviously they want to start enjoying their college life. And then if they're playing National League, they're missing out on a lot of what's happening in college and on the weekends and on the... And there's a huge commitment for them. And then sometimes they can go around the country and play not as much, maybe, as they should.
I actually interviewed Darren McGovern for tomorrow's paper, and he was actually just throwing out there that you have to play an under 20 in the first half. You have to have an under 20 on the floor, which he would say is that means that you have to have at least three on the squad, and they're getting to play. And it's the same for the other team, that they have to have an under 20. Because you said some guys were ready to go through it, Mark. You know, it was famously pointed out the likes of Gordon Fitzgerald or whatever rode the bench for 6 years before he became a starter or whatever. But that kid's a, you know, a 19, as you said, even a 21, 22-year-old, there's a stage where they pull the plug and they're not going to give that commitment to going around the country. Is there any merit in that? Or that's what you're talking about, getting them on the floor.
Yeah, it is. And like, listen, I'm not the best at it. I mean, I'm like, you know, we're all trying to win basketball matches. You're trying to keep your like, there's this kind of analogy. You know, the older players have earned their dues. They've worked hard. They've put in the time. They've done it for the last 6, 7, 8 years. Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to stop playing them and stop playing your 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds who think that they're every bit as good and maybe who haven't paid their dues yet? And then what's paying your dues? You know, like the men did introduce an under 20 league. That's been very successful. I know, like from my own situation, the lads are on Ballincollig and that they get loads of basketball now. They play in the 20 league, they play against Tralee and they play against Killorglin and they play against the Cork teams in the 20. We haven't done that with the women, you know, we haven't introduced an under 20 league. Maybe there's merit in that. Maybe just some tournaments to start off and give the younger players more game time. But like the Darren McGovern thing is a great idea in theory. But what happens to a club that doesn't
But it's particularly, you know, I suppose the way they have the playoff format, the league is back to first past the post, right, Mark? Absolutely. You've seen it all. What's your own preference? Because look, the league is still massive. Obviously, it's what you're going for now. What's your own preference? You've seen it all ways from all perspectives.
Well, it's how, like, we've won 3 or 4 leagues where we want regular season champions, you know? So, like, I think once you know at the start of the year, you set out your stall. Like, if it's a straight league, there's very, very little margin for error. So you have to,
have this year.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and then every game is a final because you can't afford to slip up because it looks like meters are not going to slip up too often. So there is that added problem, like with how you approach every game. For the men, they can afford to lose a few games, still get themselves into the playoff situation, and then go for the league at the end of the season. I think for development, playoff situation might be better in some ways because you can afford a few slip ups and you can afford to experiment a little bit more. But in the women, there isn't that margin for error, and that's not helping the situation.
There isn't. So we have a situation where, look, you're one of the top two teams in the league, but you're not in the last two of the cup, which you said is the pinnacle. So I know it galls you. You went up against Meteors. There's a chance that we could be looking back, depending on how the final goes, and saying, look, the real final was down in Neptune in the first round between you and them. It was a very close game. Mark, from having seen them, and look, you're going up against Kilester too, what's your read off this final?
Well, funny thing, I think it's going to be a really good final. I think cup finals in general, they never go according to the script. I mean, last year, just quickly, I mean, we were hot favourites to win that final last year. Let's be honest, going in, trying to keep that noise out was very difficult for us as a team. And, you know, with 8 minutes to go, it didn't look like we were going to win that final. You know, we were in serious trouble. I knew, and my team knew, that Mark Ingall and DC were going to come with a game plan and it was going to be very difficult for us to break it down. And they did that, and they did everything and threw the kitchen sink at us, and we just got over the line. So I think Meteors go into this final as firm favourites, absolutely. But I actually love the way Kilester are playing at the moment. I actually sat down last Saturday night and I watched Kilester and Liffey because I spoke to Mark Grinnell actually yesterday. And, you know, just Kilester are playing some unbelievable basketball at the moment. They're just running the basketball. They're shooting the basketball for fun. They have a very good five, very balanced five, I would say. And I just think they'll be right there in the thick of it on Sunday evening. But in saying that, Meteors have, they're almost like an old school basketball team. Like they're probably playing the way maybe teams played 7 or 8 years ago. They're controlling the tempo of the game. They're never phased. They slow the game down almost to their level. And Claire Melia has a lot to do with that at times. And their high-low game, their bigs inside, not too many teams are that big in the league at the moment. And Trinity are really, really difficult opponents because they have the kind of inside game more than the outside game that a lot of us don't have at the moment.
And so it's obviously the area of weakness as well for Colestor is that they have Ella McCluskey inside, but there aren't a lot of other big bodies. So more than likely, would you be expect? Everyone seems to think that we'll see a lot of zone from Colestor. That's probably the tactic. And then it's just a matter of whether Meteors can be patient and hit shots from the outside. Is it that simple?
I wish it was. I suppose it's look, first of all, Ella McCluskey has played unbelievable basketball. She was brilliant last week against Liffey Celtics. She was really good in the semi-final. I think she'll give Meteors their own few problems. I think the new American that they have, Latimer, is a super player. She can play, do a lot of different things. And the Lithuanian girl that they have, Jab, I think is how she goes now. That's what they call her. She's been wonderful for them as well. So they do have that little bit of, you know, kind of sneaky size, for the want of a better word, in that like they can rebound and they have a bit of length. And you know, the only thing I'd worry about Colestor is their foul trouble against Sarah and the American and Claire Mila, you know, like they have to avoid forward. But definitely, I think they'll play a lot of zone. I think they'll switch it up. I think they'll press a little bit. And I think they'll try to take the ball out of the Spanish girl's hands, who's a very good guard, and maybe force Dane and Claire to be involved more in setting up the offense, which would slow Meteors down a little bit. But you know, Mark is a good coach. He's been around the block. He knows how to win games, and I think they'll have a game plan. I think it'll be a good game of basketball.
We certainly saw with the Spanish point guard was out for Meteors in that game against Mystics just after Christmas, and Meteors really struggled to get into offense. They were just kind of a little bit out of sorts. When you have Dana, where she's not able to be aggressive herself and is trying to run the team, it really takes away from what she's able to do. The Colestor team, on the flip side of it, they have athleticism and length, as we said, and China Latimer in particular is going to be a really tough matchup for Meteors. How do you, is that like a Sarah Kenny job, or is it a, like, how do you think Niall Berry's going to approach that problem? Because she's been absolutely, she had 34 in the semi-final and has been absolutely brilliant.
I think they'll like, it'll probably be Sarah, maybe Rebecca O'Keefe, maybe Niamh Kenny at times, you know, we'll probably chase her around the place. But I think the big thing they have is that they have either Selena or Claire waiting, you know, so they probably force her into situations where they can get a lot of help on her, you know, because that's the big thing with Meteors. Like, if you don't shoot the ball really well and then you have to attack the basket, they can keep their bigs in the key. And they cause you problems. But the one thing I do like about Colestor is that they shoot the ball like very few other teams in the league. Like, we had an unbelievable match against them about 3 weeks ago above in Colestor, and it was like a shootout at the OK Corral. We made 16 threes to win that game, you know, and we had to. We had to make everyone. Like, Mimi Clark is one of my favourite players in the league, has been for a long, long time now. You know, she played for me on the national team. But what I love about Mimi is that she doesn't stand around. You think you like don't give her a shot in the corner or don't give her a shot on top of the key. No, she's the best. She's the best in the league at running around the 3-point line. She just is in constant motion. She's added being able to get to the basket when she has to. Her mid-range jumper is better, but she can really run around the 3-point line and she can cause you first problems. And if she gets hot in the arena and their small guard can penetrate the way she can, and you know, they, Meteors will have their hands full, but I wouldn't be surprised if Meteors come with a bit of zone as well against them, maybe a bit of matchup or a bit of 3-2, you know?
Yeah. That Colestor loss is their only loss since October, which kind of really speaks to how well Mark has them playing over the last while. I guess my last one on it, Mark, is like, just what's the one thing that Colestor has to get right if they're going to win, and what's the one thing Meteors have to get right if they're going to win?
I think Colestor have to stay out of foul trouble because they're not very deep. You know, they have to, and Mark has to do a very good job on rotating his players. And I think they have to shoot the ball extremely well from the 3-point line. I really do. I think that, you know, like, Meteors coast along for a lot of the games and they don't score much more than 70 points. Have they had to really score more than that to win this year? No, but they may have to do that on Sunday. If Meteors, or if Colchester score the ball and make the shots, and if Colchester's goal is to get the game into the 80s, they have a really good chance. For Meteors, they have to, I suppose they have to defend the three-point line really well. They have to stop that penetrating guard, who's brilliant when she gets in the lane. And I think Latimer could be, like, every team comes in with an American who you say, you know what, she's a cup player, you know. And I was very impressed with Latimer last week when Chanel Williams got injured, or not injured, she got in foul trouble and she had to sit out, I think, about 6 or 7 minutes of that game, or maybe longer. And Latimer went to the point and did an unbelievable job running the team. So, like, she can play four spots for them.
Yeah.
But again, like, the Clare Melia factor is huge. You know, I mean, Clare can't, if Clare, like, is allowed to play at her pace and dominate and dictate, Colchester will be in trouble. So they'll have to do something with her.
Mark, you're heavily involved. You're an observer of all basketball. You even mentioned how you're going from watching one game to another. Look, there's a lot of other, particularly underage games being played at the weekend. Is there any you're particularly keeping an eye on that you're looking forward to?
I think the 18 women's game and the 20s are two really important games, because looking at Brunel at the moment, you know, and, like, obviously they're struggling in the league because of their lack of Americans, but the amount of young players that they're producing and bringing through right now, again, here they are again back at an under-18 cup final, you know. And, you know, they're playing against Meteors, you know, and you spoke there, Kieran, earlier on about maybe a change in the guard, or maybe, like, if Meteors could start, like, maybe win this cup, they might establish themselves. Like, Meteors have been in a lot of underage finals down through the years.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't always transferred to Super League, because, you know, people have gone off to college and different things. But I think that I'd be keeping an eye on that game, because I think Meteors and Brunel both, you know, are young teams, and they could be huge teams in the Super League over the next number of years. And I think that'll be a really good game. And likewise with the under-20 game, you have UL back in an under-20 final, and that's important. It's important for National League basketball, for Limerick, to, like, obviously the great UL teams back in the day that we played against, that hasn't been the case for a while. And it's important to know that under-20 team, you know, grows and maybe gives UL a kind of a platform to get back into the Super League, because I think that would be great for the Super League. And they're playing against the University of Galway. And again, we played Galway last Sunday, and I think Paul O'Brien is doing an unbelievable job there. I think that's a coming team. And I think now with their 20s in an under-20 final, you know, that augurs very well for them for the next number of years. So, like, I suppose I'm looking at those two finals, and I'm being selfish here, thinking about, like, I want the Super League to be better, and I want, you know, UL to be back in it, and I want Galway to, you know, Meteors and Brunel to be back winning games as well, so that, like, that you know, that we have a really competitive Super League. So they'd be the two games for me. And again, just from a Cork point of view, I obviously be looking forward to seeing Demons in the under-20 final as well.
Mark, that's absolutely brilliant. Look, it's been fantastic to get your insight. It's as you said, strange. You will be up, though. I think you're doing. You're working with TG Carr on Sunday, so you'll still be part of it, and you get to experience what it's like to pace up and down the sideline going, I wish I was back out there. It's the miserable feeling of it. But thanks a million for joining us and giving us your insight. It's been absolutely brilliant.
And lads, listen, this is brilliant. The podcast, I mean, from the people I've spoken to, everybody's delighted with it. And, like, keep up the good work. Delighted to be on here today. And you know, I'll see both of you hopefully over the weekend. Thanks a million.
Cheers,
Mark. All right.
See you guys. Bye.
No, it's a fascinating insight. There's a couple of other games, Kieran, just while we're touching on those 20s games, because there's like one or two that stand out for me. On a absolutely just personal note, it's the wheelchair game on Friday evening. Mm-hmm. Rebel Wheelers are the dominant force, obviously, within wheelchair basketball, and the Colin family with Con and Connor have been huge there. But obviously Adam Drummond being back in the National Cup final is really, like, it's a special thing, and it's brilliant to see him back on that kind of level. The 18s final, Tempelhague have been, this Tempelhague team has been talked about for a number of years. So it's kind of been, I don't know if you remember Jay Fazand, who would have played for a few different teams in Super League years ago. So it's his own son and a few of the other guys. And it's going to be an absolutely fantastic game. They were brilliant in the semi-final, and Limerick Celtics have been like one of the growing clubs in underage basketball for the last while. And that game should be absolutely brilliant. The 20s men, we were very fortunate. Well, not fortunate. I think we deserve to. We beat them Blue Demons last year in that under 20 final when they had a very young team. And we were probably up, I don't know, 17, 18 with 4 minutes to go. And we managed to win by, I think, 3 in the end. And they had come back and just were so resilient. And they are a fantastic team. And it's a matchup against Talca Rovers team that is really interesting team.
Well, where's Talca at? Where Talca's a club. I mean, I remember actually when Demons came back into the Super League in 1998-99, Pat's first season, I remember going up to Talca, Pat Boylan and them. And then obviously they dropped out of league. That's where Mark Ingall actually played a cup semi-final. That was the first time the two Marks would have gone against each other. So they had that National League, Super League experience around the either side of the millennium, and obviously they were very strong on the women's side. Where is the club? Are they at?
Well, they're in the President's Cup final as well, which is the National League final. They in Dublin, they probably aren't like a dominant force, but one of the big things that's happened over recent years is that they kind of have a link agreement or a partnership or some connection with Dundalk Ravens. So Elijah Fepito is the point guard for the under-20s. He's really talented. And there's a lot of guys who've come in through that kind of connection and have been supplemented by the original Talca people. And you have the likes of Matt Tracy at National League level, has obviously have been away to the States for a number of years, is back. I saw him on crutches, so I'm not sure whether he's able to play in the cup final or not. And then you have someone like Michael Bonaparte as their import player who has turned back the clock. And I think that's one of the things of the beauty of the cup final weekend is the, I guess from my own point of view, from the likes of a Bonaparte, the Adam Drummond part, the all these different things, there's so many people who have their connection with the final that it's not just a Super League men's and Super League women's final. There's so much more. With 11 finals over the weekend, there's everybody has some connection to it in some way, and it's really special. And it's one of the things when Mark touched upon the fact that the arena sells out so easily now for the, particularly for the men's final, because you just don't have the capacity. And you're getting into a stage where you have to figure out long term whether you're going to try and get into a bigger venue. How you do that, it's really difficult in Ireland. But even if you did that, would you lose some of the wider weekend part of it and the specialness of the cup that we love so much at the moment? And it's a question that someone else has to figure out, not me anymore, when we used to think about that in basketball Ireland. But it's
The kind of thing that we're still, and I think even, and I think it's why people have responded to the pod, we're floating things out, like even just what we're saying about Darren and the input the likes of Mark gave there. You know, like, it's funny, my very first time, I'm giving away, Pat talked about giving away his age, I'm giving away both mine and Mark's, but when the very first station I had at a camp, a residential camp, was down in Killarney in 86 as a 14-year-old, and a 19-year-old, Mark Scannell, was my coach taking us through passing, and just to hear his passion and knowledge for the game still, and you're right, like, it's all interconnected, you know. We're talking about Notre Dame beating both Mark and Pat in their as rookies. Anthony Jenkins would have been coaching that Notre Dame team, playing for them. His son Sean is obviously playing with Anna, who would be kind of an offshoot of Notre Dame. And you know, I see even in the Division One final, Ulster University. So all the provinces are represented. You know, Conor O'Sullivan, who famously would have played, his father Tom would have played obviously in the team that Mark coached. There's loads of connections, as you said. It is great to see Adam back after what he was through, and that, you know, we've talked about the equality of basketball. I mean, when people do think of of sport that, that you can do for people of all situations, like, you know, like the wheelchair basketball. And I've touched on it maybe before in the pod. That final is one I'm going to watch. I remember watching it for the first time, to be straight with your hands up, was 4 years ago, and just being taken, blown away by it. So right away from Friday night to the women's final on Sunday, it's a massive weekend, really enjoyable. And it's one that we would recommend, obviously, being basketball heads. Obviously, the two finals, Super League finals, are on TG Cahir, national television, which is great. Tell us more about where people can see the other finals.
Yeah, so the rest of them are all on Basketball Ireland streaming platform, so basketballireland.tv. So I just go to ireland.basketball, which is the Basketball Ireland website, and you'll be able to get all the details. You'll be able to watch every game, full commentary and everything else. So it is worth tuning in and seeing. Look, every year we have amazing stories, amazing games come through these. It's a kid at Christmas kind of thing of... cup weekend. I remember, just as a quick one, is I think I was nine in primary school, and my teacher, who was our Gaelic coach, was listening on the radio a preview of the cup finals. It was a Friday night, so the semi-finals were on that night up in the arena, and he knew I was going to be going and everything else, and he was kind of like asking me about the teams that were playing in it. And it's like, it was the first moment in my life that I was kind of like, someone's asking me about like the sport that I love and I'm so absorbed in that nobody else really pays attention to. And it's that window into our sport that the Cup has because of all the media attention and everything else. So it's why it's so magical, and it's why it's so important to so many people. And this weekend will be no different. So Yeah,
like as you said, Connor, it's where a lot of the media attention is. We've been delighted to bring this podcast. We're going to shut it down for a little while. The Examiner covers plenty of other sports, other podcasts that the Examiner roll out, particularly on the JA front, will be coming back very soon. But look, the basketball season is still going on. Mark Scannell there maybe didn't declare it, but you could tell he's adamant to get that Super League title. Both the men's Super League Meteors, along with the two finalists in the men's, we could have a situation where they're the top two of the league. We had that last year where the Neptune and Tralee met in both finals. And so we will be probably back either side of the Super League finals. But until then, we hope everybody takes care and really enjoys the weekend. And it's been great to connect with the basketball community and get people from the basketball community. And look, Connor, it's great from you. I know you're in the media game, but the reason why we would have identified you is because you're basketball true and true, and your knowledge has really shone through. And I know from talking to basketball people, they would have felt that there was a gap that way that we don't get. Like when basketball people are talking water cooler, we go into X and O's and how about this, and yet that form hasn't really been in the media. We've helped close that, I think, through your knowledge anyway. And I think people have enjoyed it. And look, I've enjoyed doing the pod with you. And let's do it again in March.
Yeah, no, brilliant, Kieran. And thanks for doing it. It's been fantastic chatting away. It's great to get all the feedback. If people have other feedback, look, you can get in touch with the Examiner and you know how to reach us. And it's been great to have some of these conversations. And I look forward to more in the future at some stage.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.